Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
Hi, I'm Ann Northrup.
And a lot of news this week, starting with the very, very sad death of Amy Stevens. She was a transgender hero, and she died just before the Supreme Court was about to rule on her case.
We now have two of the three plaintiffs in those cases before the Supreme Court dead. That's interesting. And we also lost a giant in Little Richard, the father of rock and roll, died at age 87. He brought an amazing mix of gay flamboyance and outrageous rock and roll to 1950s America.
Now, Amy Stevens' case was heard back in October, but this week they heard two cases, and they seem poised to exempt religiously affiliated organizations and maybe individuals from human rights laws.
The hideous Franklin Graham has folded his tents in Central Park and left. He left the park a mess, and there are still a lot of First Amendment issues to be ferreted out and information about how he got there. So we'll discuss all of that.
So in the sort of in the vein of what HIV activists did years ago, a COVID-19 patient-led group is telling us things that, well, at least I didn't know about this disease, and we'll report on their findings.
Well, the fact that they've gathered to look into this is news in and of itself. And yes, they're picking up some nuances. In Australia, in a case we've been following for years, they finally made an arrest for the 1988 murder of a gay man who had been thought originally to have committed suicide, one of a lot of cases like this.
And I finally delved into most of Hollywood. I guess you would just say Hollywood. It's full of gay themes, and it's on Netflix.
The Ryan Murphy production.
Yes.
But we do start with the very sad news of the death of Amy Stevens. She was a funeral home employee who'd been at a funeral home in Michigan for some years, the Harris Funeral Home. And after a few years there, she announced to her boss that she was transitioning. And that she came to work in female clothing, and that went on for a little while, and he said, I can't take this, you're not going to do this, you're not an acceptable figure for our clients, you're fired.
The picture we have up on the screen is of Amy at the Supreme Court with her surviving spouse, Donna Stevens, and by the way, she is survived by her wife and her daughter, Elizabeth.
Yes. Donna on the right there. It's so sad. She was
59 years old.
59 years old. She'd had diabetes and other complications. They had just put up a GoFundMe page for her to try to help with her expenses of her illness and her living, and which is still up there. And it led me to think, she'd been fired from her job. Was she then without health insurance and without a way to pay these expenses that she was now piling up at the end of her life? It's terrible.
And, you know, so, you know, her case based was from the EEOC, right?
Yes, originally.
And she won it at the Court of Appeals. These are cases that are saying if you're discriminated against because of your gender identity and expression, that's sex discrimination, and it's covered under Title
Seven
of the Supreme Court.
Someone will correct me.
Civil Rights
Title Seven, Title Nine, one of each.
All those things. But yeah. Here's the thing. You know, look, she talked about how hard it was for her to stand up for herself as a transgender woman. But she said, the more I've seen the support I get, it gives me strength to get up another day, to go on fighting another day, and give that same hope to all the rest. So if she wins this case, it will, once and for all, or at least until we get an even worse Supreme Court, say that, because there's lots of precedent for this. I mean, as you know, she won at the Court of Appeals. It will say that this is covered. If we don't, we're going to need the Equality Act.
So this is one of three cases now before the Supreme Court that were argued some months ago, and we've been waiting for the decision, which has to come by the end of June, unless this whole virus situation is screwing up that schedule. But we would expect within the next few weeks to have a decision on this. And the question is, are sexual orientation and gender identity and expression covered by the term sex in sex non-discrimination laws? And we have a pretty good track record in the lower courts. We've won most of those cases. So this is Amy Stevens at the funeral home as a trans woman. It's a gay man who was a skydiving instructor who died after he was fired for having told a client that he was gay.
Don Zarda.
Yeah, to reassure her that he was not going to come on to her while strapped to her in a skydive. And his family continued that case. And Amy's estate and family are continuing her case. They will benefit if the Supreme Court rules in her favor. And the third person still alive was someone from Georgia, I believe, a deputy sheriff or something who was discriminated against. And it's just tragic that we're losing these brave people who stood up for themselves, losing them at early ages. And we are at the mercy of the majority conservative Supreme Court in deciding whether people have a right to be themselves or whether people around them have a right to discriminate against them. Yes.
When your ray of hope in her case is Neil Gorsuch, you are in some trouble.
Or Brett Kavanaugh, I guess, but I actually have a little more faith in Kavanaugh than Gorsuch, but who knows? It's not good. It's not good. And then this, I wasn't planning to tie these together, but these cases of the Catholic schools firing teachers, and that's now before the Supreme Court, too. And we've had a lot of cases of Catholic schools firing LGBT employees and getting away with it because of religious exemptions, or not getting away with it because they were the employees were ruled non-religious employees. And the cases before the Supreme Court right now are about a woman who had breast cancer, a teacher, and was fired for having breast cancer, and another one who was fired because of her age. And the schools and the Department of Justice are going to the Supreme Court and saying these schools have a blanket exemption from any kind of non-discrimination laws.
That's where all this is headed. Now what these Catholic schools are, they want immunity in non-ministerial jobs, every single thing under their purview. And the conservative justices who heard the case seem to be leaning towards granting that. Justice Ginsburg, however, said, well, suppose a teacher reports a student's complaint of sexual harassment by a priest, and then it's terminated. She has no remedy. And so they really want this expansive ministerial exception.
And what I think is really outrageous about this is if you are the Catholic Church and you're running this school and you fire a gay teacher because being gay does not comport with Catholic doctrine, and maybe the court agrees with you on that, hideous, but you could make that case. But to fire someone for having breast cancer, how does that have anything to do with any kind of religious doctrine?
Well, I mean, up until now, look, I was on the Human Rights Commission in New York. We decided cases against religious institutions, especially where there was sexual harassment by the minister on staff. I mean, you can't just, what are you going to just say? Oh, that's okay. I mean, you know, who do they think they are? Donald Trump? this would undermine civil rights laws across the country entirely. And because if they extend it to these religious institutions, then they'll say, well, this person had a religious feeling or a moral feeling about something, you know, like cancer is your fault or something. I don't know. And everybody will just get exempted from the laws.
Well, those are the kinds of laws that states are now considering and passing occasionally. that it doesn't have to be that you're an official religion, that just that you have a religious or moral objection to someone. And that's frankly where the Hobby Lobby case came in too, where about financing employees' contraceptive prescriptions or even referring them to another entity that would give them contraception.
And we didn't really talk. The case was heard last Wednesday, Trump versus Pennsylvania, Little Sisters of the Poor, all those cases, which are their crusade to stop reproductive rights in healthcare and women's equality in general. And Trump wants that religious freedom exemption to be given any employer that wants one. Ginsburg called in for this case from her hospital bed to be on the phone call, but and she talked about, well, you know, you're talking about the harm to like Little Sisters of the Poor if they have to tell somebody go get this help elsewhere. What about the harm to women and not having reproductive health? There's no consideration for that. And, Pennsylvania, the state of Pennsylvania said, you were taking away the power from Congress and the courts to enforce the Affordable Care Act.
Well, that's just fine with the religious right, because they don't want any civil law to prevail. They want only their definition of religious scripture. It's Sharia law from the religious right.
There is no king but Jesus, they say. They do say that a lot. And they think Donald Trump is his instrument. Without exaggeration, they say that.
No exaggeration. And of course, the bottom line on all of this is that if you want this system to continue, by all means, reelect Donald Trump and put more Sharia law advocates on the Supreme Court.
Well, you might as well talk about what they did to Title IX in the Department of Health and Human Services. They finalized that rule ending collection of data regarding sexual orientation. The administration is fixed on targeting LGBTQ rights in foster care and adoption. They say that this gutting of collection of data will save $46 million. They didn't say how it's going to save $46 million. And this is National Foster Care Month, and they're doing all this then.
Yeah, this is specifically the rescinding of the mandate to collect data on LGBT parents and kids in the adoption foster care system. And the good news in this area comes from South Carolina, where the lesbian couple who were rejected as foster parents or adoptive parents and the state was given permission to keep funding these agencies with public money, even though they refused to consider LGBT parents. The district court says the couple may challenge the HHS, the Health and Human Services waiver for religious agencies. So that will start going up the legal chain. But again, if it gets to a Supreme Court that says these Sharia laws are fine, you could give public money to support these discriminatory religions.
I only saw the headline. Maybe you read the story. Something about Clarence Thomas saying if a state wants to declare a state religion, it can.
Well, I didn't see that, but that case is not at the Supreme Court yet.
Well, but good news for the Catholic Church: 12,000 Catholic churches, parishes applied for PPP loans, and 9,000 were approved. This is the Paycheck Protection Program. Many small businesses were shut out of it. Mm-hmm. Jews and evangelicals are also getting loans as well. So the barrier between church and state continues to crumble.
No barrier.
Well, I will say this, because we've been giving you so much bad news. What tends to happen in societies where they do just combine church and state is that people don't go to church anymore. The religion thrived in this country because of the separation of church and state. But when you pollute it this way, young people look at it and say, this is pretty corrupt, and they stop going.
Well, if the federal government and the state governments are funding religion, they don't need parishioners anymore. They will just sit home and take in that money and control all our lives.
All right.
And on that note, let's move back to
Little Richard.
Let's do Little Richard before we get to the virus news. What a guy, Little Richard. Now, Little Richard showed up in the 50s from Macon, Georgia, and he was a crazy man.
Well, he was trying to preserve his sanity by being himself, I think. You know, in his lifetime, and this is back in the 50s.
Yeah.
He identified as gay, bisexual, omnisexual.
Straight.
But of course, later he embraced his Seventh-day Adventist religion and he denounced homosexuality.
Well, he kind of went back and forth between his...
What's going on there?
Somebody's calling someone on this.
I don't know.
Rich trying to get back in?
I don't know.
Not me. Well, I don't know what that is, but we're going to ignore it and go on.
Being attacked?
I don't know what that is.
We don't know how that works. This is Zoom. Zoom can be a problem.
I hope we're not being Zoom bombed. All right, continue. Little Richard. Is that Little Richard calling from heaven to talk about himself?
Wherever. Well, I mean, you know, somebody we know, Gene Fedorko, said the nuns in the 1950s, he's a gay activist, but he was going to school in the 1950s, he said, commanded him not to listen to Little Richard, of which, of course, he did.
Well, his first big hit, Tutti Frutti, was a song about anal sex before they censored it and he had to change the lyrics. It was, I mean, he was just an amazing phenomenon. And he,
when he was growing up, his father brutally punished him when he caught him wearing his mother's clothes and makeup and kicked him out at the age of 15.
So he was given credit as having invented rock and roll, but the claim has been a little disputed. He had some forebears who are not always acknowledged, but he was so outrageous that he was not given the credit that he should have been given over the years. People who were a little more acceptable to the mainstream, like Elvis or others, managed to get the more widespread acceptance. So he didn't get the honors. There he is in full makeup, which he affected usually, and being loved and kissed by the girls, although he was very flamboyantly gay. But he was quite the phenomenon. Let's see. Yes, there he is with his foot up on the piano, a very common move by him. And
I'm not seeing the pictures anymore on the screen, by the way. I hope you're hearing me.
Oh, yes, we're hearing you. And I'm seeing the pictures, so that's all you need.
All right. Okay. Well, you know, John Waters said that Little Richard was the first punk, the first everything. John Waters says his own mustache was modeled on Little Richard's.
He was sometimes referred to as the queen of rock and roll.
Yes. Well, you know, he's credited with spawning David Bowie, Bob Dylan, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones. I mean, practically everybody. You know, you talked about early influences. He drew a lot of inspiration from gospel music, especially Marion Williams. When she was a Kennedy Center honoree back in, I think, 98, he said she made him a star and gave him his whoops. You know, that's where he learned that.
Well, that's what he said at the Kennedy Center Honors, but there was also a guy, Esquiteria, from whom he copied a lot of his look and a lot of his moves.
Now, later in life, I mean, in 84, he called homosexuality unnatural affections. You've got to live the way God wants you to live. He was ordained a minister back in 1970. But in 95, he was saying things like, I've been gay all my life, and I know God is a God of love, not a God of hate. So he kind of went hot and cold on this stuff.
Very much so. In and out of the closet continually. And as you say, defining himself as gay, bisexual, omnisexual, all over the place. So he was a wild man who was definitely a leader, definitely a forebearer of many, and certainly beloved by other musicians.
Right.
All right. So, Little Richard.
Before we go to other people we've lost and more COVID news, should we talk about protest?
We certainly can.
well, your friend, Anne, you know, are you a journalist or are you an activist? Anne is with Reclaim Pride and put the pressure on, and they've gotten Franklin Graham to leave New York and Central Park. We have a picture of the state in which they've left our park.
Shameful.
Now, Graham, you know, what did we learn this week?
Look at all that brown grass, all that. That is the mess they left. Now, a year ago, we were negotiating with the New York City Parks Department about using another part of the park, the Great Lawn, for our Reclaim Pride Queer Liberation March rally. And we spent so much money and so much time covering parts of the park in exactly the way they told us so that not a blade of grass would be harmed. And now look at what Samaritan's Purse has left behind. Shameful.
Awful. Now, what did we learn this week? There was a story in the New York Post that said that Trump was going to take the money that he's withholding from the World Health Organization and give it to groups like Samaritan's Purse. Oh, Franklin Graham says, I'm not interested in receiving that money.
He doesn't need to. He raises so much by going into the tents and filming.
He didn't say he wouldn't take it. But, you know, the New York Times did a bunch of stories this week, many of them featuring Anne. They reported that the Human Rights Commission, they didn't find discrimination against the patients, but no word about the two cases of people who tried to volunteer with them who were gay, who were stopped from doing that.
So 10 days ago, we did a press conference that got busted up by the cops. We talked all about that last week. We thought I was the only one who got a summons for that. All badly written, lots of mistakes, wrong name, wrong date, wrong place. But then what should appear in the mail by the end of last week but a summons for Reverend Billy of the Stop Shopping Choir, great activist who had been there at our press conference. And he got a perfectly made out summons in the mail. So now there are two of us ordered to court at the end of August if the courts are open by then.
And de Blasio is not letting up on his assault on the First Amendment. If you have a physically distanced protest or press conference outside, unless maybe you're an elected official who's going after him, he hasn't seemed to stop those. But there were people in City Hall Park who were just, they were not near each other. And they were maybe holding flags or things like that, expressing themselves. And they were cuffed by the cops. We have a picture of them in the park.
Nine of them arrested. These are the people who want the city and state and country reopened. But they appear to be wearing masks. They have had some more raucous protests, but they have now calmed down. They're sticking to the rules, and they still got arrested. I didn't get arrested. Yeah. They got arrested.
They, by the way, have an ally in Franklin Graham, who was pushing Trump's reopen agenda. He says the liberal media and the politicians want to use the pandemic to bring down Trump. He's worried about our constitutional rights, just like us.
Franklin Graham's line is, we're all going to die sometime. Why not?
Why not now?
Yeah, why not just
get it over with?
God is in charge.
Be with your heavenly father.
God is in charge.
By the way, we also learned that Mount Sinai Hospital lied to us when they said that they didn't choose him from a list of possibilities. There was a list of possibilities.
Yeah.
We learned that subsequently this week. And we also learned that that Samaritan's Purse was working right inside the hospital at Mount Sinai. It wasn't just in those tents.
And at Beth Israel.
Yeah.
Norman Siegel, our lawyer, sent an urgent letter to the mayor and to the police commissioner and to the governor saying, you have to rescind these summons, you're violating the First Amendment. No answer, nothing, not a word from the mayor or the police commissioner or the governor.
I don't even get an answer from the administration when I ask, what are the statistics on LGBTQ people and people with HIV with COVID-19? At the press conference, they said, oh, that's very important. We want to be transparent. It's been 2 weeks, nothing from them. Even Corey Johnson can't get it out of them. He's the out gay, out HIV positive speaker of the council.
And it's really important to get this information. And that's why we're, in fact, excited about this new report that has been issued by a group of health activists and COVID patients. These are people who are experienced AIDS activists, and they decided they were not getting enough information about anybody from any administration.
So they surveyed 640 patients between April 21st and May 2nd, and boy, some of the things that they found out. Should we go into them?
Yeah, I just want to say the title of this survey, and we'll put a link to it in our weekly show note, is Prolonged COVID-19 Symptoms Survey by Patient-Led Research Team.
All right. So, you know, we've heard that symptoms include cough, fever, shortness of breath. They found neurological, gastrointestinal, cardiovascular, fatigue in 81% of respondents, chills, sweats, body aches, headache, brain fog, and concentration issues, gastrointestinal issues, trouble sleeping, and dizziness. Wow. So,
and these are symptoms that happen after you supposedly recover. These are post-COVID symptoms, and they found that recovery can take at least 6 weeks. So the value of this survey is to tell people what to expect and reassure them, in fact, that they are on a path to recovery, probably, but that it's going to take a lot longer than anyone has told them. Half of the people they surveyed are still being denied tests to confirm their infection. And, of course, the tests they do get are often inaccurate and late and a mess.
And they found
a lot of stigma against these patients, and sadly from medical staff in some places.
And who was standing up for early testing and our failure to do that? Mitt Romney this week in the hearings.
Yeah.
He was really incisive on that.
He was, and Trump has just been even worse than usual. And what I actually think is the headline of the week, and one of the more disgusting things I've ever heard, and he started this a little while ago, him trying to cut back on the numbers, the actual numbers of people with the virus. Early on, he refused to let the cruise ship with a lot of people infected dock in the United States, because that would drive up the numbers of infected people.
State government is doing that too.
Well, now Trump wants fewer deaths reported. So he wants anyone who has the virus but has complications like a heart attack or something, he doesn't want them being counted as virus deaths. He wants them off the rolls. And Dr. Deborah Birx, supposedly this great hero, is going along with this.
She's not a great hero. She's in the tank.
Well, of course she's in the tank, but people have been treating her, along with Fauci, as if they are the great saviors.
Now, I'm not going to defend plandemic. It needs to be debunked, of course, that thing. But it's not like Fauci is above reproach. It's not like he's the be-all and end-all, as Rand Paul says.
Well, the other thing,
Trump, our criticisms over the years, but plandemic, please, I'm getting emails from people, progressive people. Have you seen plandemic? Yes, it's ridiculous. This woman is a crank.
Trump also wants people who die at home with really apparent COVID symptoms to not be counted because they haven't been formally tested.
Yeah.
So he's trying to keep the numbers way, way
down. And all of this and the reopenings are just going to make it harder on nurses. Nurses had a demonstration outside the White House. They were not arrested, but we have a picture of them, I think, Rich, of the nurses demonstrating there outside the White House. By the way, our mayor, de Blasio, told about this and about other nurses demonstrating and about Reclaim Pride demonstrating. He said, it's idiotic. It's idiotic. And how else are we going to get attention to this?
The nurses,
by the way, 90% of the failure to social, you know, physically distance arrests in New York are people of color.
Yes. And those white shoes in front of the nurses were laid out there to represent the 88 at that point nurses who have died treating COVID patients.
By the way, coronavirus has been now found in semen, sorry to report. Chinese researchers found that 16% of the men tested had it, so it can be sexually transmitted.
And we do have another famous death from coronavirus, and that is Roy Horn of Siegfried and Roy. Died at he's on the right there with one of his white tigers, not the one who mauled him. Died at 75 in Las Vegas. It was 17 years ago in 2003 that he was mauled by the tiger. He is survived by Siegfried. They were, I'm not going to make comparisons, but they were given credit for having really brought Las Vegas into its current amazing success story. Their magic act, which was quite spectacular, was the first really over-the-top act to appear in Las Vegas years ago. And in fact, what made them, what brought them to the world's attention was a performance they gave in Monaco for Princess Grace in 1966. And she gave them such a rave review that made their careers take off.
They teamed up first in 1957. They were quite the team. And
quite the partners.
Siegfried said he was that Roy was a fighter his whole life.
Yeah.
All right. Some other COVID stuff.
Yes.
Now the treatment for the seriously ill with remdesivir, they've only got 200,000 doses of this, so I wonder what's going to happen to people with AIDS who need it, and it's being doled out like gold to some of the states. So that's a problem. Also, milder cases are being treated with the HIV drug Keletra, and that seems to be having some positive effect.
Well, it's having a positive effect
with other things.
Yes, combination. Keletra has two drugs, and they're adding a third and fourth drug to it, and having some good effect. There's also an Israeli anti-HIV drug that is helping. They're doing a small trial of that in the Congo. There's a lot of work going on treatments. I'm a lot more optimistic about treatments than I am about a vaccine, which, of course, was our HIV experience, too.
Now, the CDC, for the first time, is now including data on transgender and non-binary people in its reports on HIV infection. This is not COVID. There's an entire section now on trans people. The news is not good. The numbers are increasing for trans people. 2% of new infections are among transgender people, mostly Latinx transgender people. It's been stable for black, white, and mixed race. Mostly trans women, not men.
The numbers for people who use intravenous drugs are also up a little. Both trans people and people using drugs intravenously are up a little. It's not dramatic. New infections overall are down, although still black and Latinx young men are at greatest risk.
Facebook, by the way, is now trying to fund journalistic outlets around the country because of COVID-19. And they gave their only LGBT grant to $100,000 to Between the Lines in Michigan to support their coverage of COVID-19 and the impact on LGBTQ people. So there's big fund for that. There's a German study on men that says men with low testosterone levels that contract COVID-19 have a far greater risk of dying, two times the risk. So when you don't have this, apparently your immune system can go crazy, can go haywire. So they're looking at that.
Well, the information is all over the place because a month ago we were saying that women were dying less because of estrogen. So let's give estrogen to men to try to help them prevent it more. We're still not fully informed about this. And one of the things that's now a new subject is contact tracing, and there's a big fight in New York City about usually contact tracing is done by the health department, but the mayor's mad at the health department, so now he's asking the hospitals department to do the contact tracing, and they're not as experienced at it.
Doesn't inspire a lot of confidence, does it?
And community activists are saying, hey, you know, if people of color are dying at much huger rates, shouldn't you be hiring a lot of people from those communities to do the contact tracing? Because they have to go call people up and find out who they've been around for the last few weeks. Right. So it's a mess. It is a mess. And they have to hire thousands of people to do tens of thousands of person-to-person contact tracing. It's an overwhelming problem. Also a problem is that calls to LGBT helplines and suicide hotlines and everything are way up because people are so stressed out and don't have the answers around this. And then we have discrimination. In Korea, the gay community is now a huge scapegoat for the new infections there.
It's happening around the world. In Korea, South Korea, they said, oh, this guy, 29, he went to a gay bar and he spread around the whole country. I mean, it just becomes like a story. And then people turn on the LGBTQ community.
Yeah, it's a patient zero story. And the ongoing blood donation discrimination story, Brad Hoylman, state senator, said
our state senator.
Yep, went to give blood at the New York Blood Center. He said, I fit the new guidelines, which say if you haven't had sex with another man in the last 3 months, you are eligible to donate. And he was turned away.
Well, you know, and we thought that they changed the guidelines from a year to 3 months because of this crisis. And yet the blood banks say we need it like 3 months to a year to retool our, you know, to get the mimeograph machine working again so we can put out new stuff and train people. It's so easy.
It's shocking. It's really shocking.
All right.
And finally, just a note, in San Francisco, the GLBT Historical Society has postponed the building of a big history museum they had planned there because of the virus and everything is shut down.
All right, some other news from around the country.
They're going to do stuff online.
Okay. Some other news from around the country. You know about the trans athlete case in Connecticut, the Alliance for Freedom right-wing group. They're going, the lawyers there are going after, they don't want trans girls competing with other girls. And they want the judge from the case to recuse himself because he insists on calling the transgender athletes transgender females. And the lawyers say, well, wait a minute, you're deciding the whole case right there. You know, they call them males. And the judge said, come on, let's be respectful to each other at least. And
good luck. speaking of which,
can't wait till that case comes to the Supreme Court and see what language they use.
Our very respectful Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, is about to issue the report of his Commission on Unalienable Rights. And he wants to take back rights to God-given Christians, not inflated human rights to us or other people. It's so crazy.
I hope people will read, you know, unalienable rights. I don't think that phrase was used much before it was in the Declaration of Independence. And I want you to read the Declaration of Independence because it says when the system of government you have don't work anymore, get a new one. That's what we did. That's what it says. I hope people will take that up.
Well, this is supposed to be a commission to study human rights around the world. So he stacked it with notorious homophobes and transphobes who will then predictably issue this report that says human rights do not include us and should only include rights for Christians.
Well, we'll get to some of that when we talk to, get to international news. We're down to our last 18 and a half minutes. In Oklahoma, the Republican legislature passed a gratuitous law requiring anyone handling human remains to be notified if the deceased is HIV positive. 40 years into a pandemic, that they never gave a damn about.
You can be discriminated against even when you're dead.
Very horrifying news from San Antonio. A 20-year-old trans woman was killed while working at the Diesel Barbershop. Her name was H-E-L-L-E, Helle J. O'Regan. She was attacked by this guy named Damian Campbell, 42, who showed up for a haircut. And when he was asked to just provide some form of payment, he went to his car and he returned with a knife, a gun, and a backpack. God sent me here to kill you because you have done something wrong. Forced three people in the shop into the back, one escaped, another was stabbed, but got a Reagan in a chokehold and stabbed her to death. He's being charged with murder. O'Regan was described as a caring person, never in a bad mood, had a hard life as a trans person, but lived like it was the last day of her life, her friend said.
In New York State, because of the coronavirus, they have extended the time for people to report childhood sex abuse. They put in a one-time extension of time last year of about a year. They've now extended it to January 14th, 2021. And we're not sure that's enough time either, but that's the new rule. You have a little longer to report violence done to you as a child.
And New York State, the new surrogacy law, we're learning more about it. It has the strictest protections in the nation for the women who carry the children. You got to pay a minimum of $35,000 if you want their services.
One more note on the childhood sexual abuse. Did you see the Independent Lens episode this week?
Nope.
They do PBS documentaries each week on Monday evenings. I find most of them really compelling, but this one was spectacular. It's called Rewind, and you can find it on demand or probably online. And it's this young boy who was abused by his uncle, and he is an amazing kid, and he's now a grown-up. And the family took lots of video and film all through childhood, and he and his little sister were abused. And the way they spoke as children is unbelievable. They're so smart. And it's a really, really good documentary on Independent Lens, Rewind, on PBS.
We bring you a lot of bad news on this show, but in Ohio, from the town of Gambier, they added sexual orientation and gender identity to their non-discrimination law. It's the first place to do it via Zoom, and the 29th municipality in Ohio. This is the home to Kenyon College.
And it's sort of good news that the Trenton, New Jersey councilwoman apologized for her disgusting rant against the gay mayor of Trenton. But frankly, she's just trying not to get kicked out of office, so I'm not impressed.
Remember when bisexual Katie Hill resigned from Congress and saw the scandal? Her seat went back to a Republican, Mike Garcia. And in Wisconsin, the Republican won the House seat by 14 points, but not the 20 that Trump won the state by in 2016.
And both seats are up again in November, so maybe we can do something about that.
National news?
No. Another piece of good news in New York City, there's a new LGBTQ-affirming Grace Alive Fellowship in a Chinese Baptist church. And the Queen's Pride Parade is going to be held online June 7th. But the news...
How are going to do that?
The new... stay tuned. Reclaim Pride is formulating some plans, too. The news I wanted to talk about, maybe you have this under international news, is our friend Colin Robinson.
Yes, I do.
Who we knew here for years, but has been living in Trinidad and Tobago for the last few years and doing wonderful activist work.
He worked at GMHC here. He was one of the leading people who got AIDS education in the schools in the city of New York.
And he's a well-known and decorated writer, a poet, an essayist, and just a lovely, lovely human being. And he wrote a note this week, I guess on Facebook or maybe for a publication in Trinidad. but he is dying of colon cancer. And it's just heartbreaking because he's such a great guy. He was a field producer for Tongues Untied. He also was a member of GMAD, Gay Men of African Descent. He was a grand marshal of the Brooklyn Pride Parade in 2000. He just lived, he is living, he's still around, but he announced that he's in stage 4 colon cancer. Well, but he's been involved in everything.
But this column is about dying, and he says, yeah, it's hard to deal with people who burst into tears at the news and need attention from me. I need some life to die. I want to save the emotional capacity that I have for that, for the very people who want to spare me from it. But the primary challenge, he said, is managing pain.
Yes, he's having a terrible time with pain. But what a sweetheart.
Yes, we love Colin.
Very sad news.
In Australia, now we've told you about this case. Back in the 80s, there was a cliff in Sydney where gay men cruised, and there were gangs of young people throwing the men off the cliff to their deaths. The police were recording them as suicides. There's a guy named Scott. One of the guys who died in this was Scott Johnson, then 27 years old in 1988. And they have finally, through the intercession of his brother, Steve, who was a former vice president of AOL, who put up $1 million, the state put up $1 million to finally get somebody to come forward about this. They arrested a 49-year-old and charged in the killing. And there were a whole rash of murders, a lot of police malfeasance. But the police have now reviewed the deaths of 88 other men from 1976 to 2000 and found 20 linked to anti-gay bias.
And Steve, the brother who's pursued the case all these years, was really, really angry at the police early on. But now he gives them a lot of credit for having listened and pursued this and investigated it relentlessly and finally coming up with someone they've charged with the murder.
So let's investigate what's going on in Uganda. Are you finished with Australia?
Yes.
Let's investigate what's going on in Uganda. We've told you about this case for weeks. 23 gay men detained, ostensibly because of violating the COVID lockdown, that was the pretext, paraded them through the streets, tethered to each other. Oh, yeah, that's physical distancing. We have a picture here. It's heavy. And we got a video, which we will send you in the email. Beating these guys down with a rod. They're not allowed to see their lawyers. It's a horrendous human rights situation. They've got good lawyers trying to represent them, but the homophobia is so heavy there.
It's terrible. Also in the category of combating violence, from the UK, we celebrate the 30th anniversary of a group no longer in business, although the activists connected with it, some of them are, Outrage, formed 30 years ago in reaction to the murder of a 48-year-old actor, Michael Booth, who was kicked to death by a group of 6 men just right there in the street.
None of them have been brought to justice.
Yeah. But Outrage formed. This is a picture of one of their more outrageous demonstrations where they invaded a pulpit of the Archbishop of Canterbury or Canterbury Cathedral.
On Easter Sunday, took over the pulpit and chastised him for his homophobia and opposing gay rights, etc.
So Outrage went out of business about nine years ago.
We will send you a link to a video about them and their history.
Peter Tatchell, very involved with them. He did things like the attempt to perform a citizen's arrest of Robert Mugabe when he came to London.
There were lesbians who challenged the marriage law in Outrage in 1992.
Excellent.
It was grassroots group, no paid staff. That's how you get things done.
Well, it is. The minute you start paying people for this activist work, they become bureaucratic organizations. And when you stay independent, that's when you are fearless and you have nothing to lose and you do get things done.
I just want to say one other thing that they did. They went after police who rounded up gay men who had harmed no one, you know, in sex situations. Within 3 years, the number of men arrested for gay sex fell by 2/3 because of their activism.
Terrific. And in Taiwan, activists are petitioning for broader same-sex marriage laws. Taiwan, a year ago, legalized same-sex marriage, but only between Taiwanese or people from countries where same-sex marriage is legal. Well, that leaves out China, that leaves out Japan, that leaves out every country in Southeast Asia, not to mention beyond. There are only 26 countries where it's legal. So they are now petitioning the government to say, look, legalize all same-sex marriages. You cannot start picking and choosing who's allowed to get married.
In Brazil, the Supreme Court, are you sitting down, threw out the rules that limit gay men donating blood. Hungary has done this too. These are two right-wing countries now. But
amazing.
And Germany...
Well, maybe Trump should take lessons from Viktor Orban and Jair Bolsonaro.
Well, not the way Orban is going after transgender people. Yeah. Germany passed its ban on conversion therapy for under 18s. Critics want the age raised to 26 for the ban. Parents can be punished for putting their children through it with a year in prison and a $32,000 fine. This
Excellent.
Is a conservative government.
Well, can I, I know we're running out of time, but I have to go back to Brazil to read a sentence from the court's decision overturning the blood donation ban. They said it was unconstitutional, the ban, because it offended the basic human dignity of gay and bisexual men and restricts solidarity based on prejudice and discrimination. Wow. That's a pretty bold move by the court in Brazil these days.
On the other hand, in Turkey, they ordered kids in school to stop drawing rainbows, calling it an international plot to turn children gay. People are putting up rainbows in their windows to support, like, healthcare workers and things like that, and comfort other people. But the kids in Turkey are being told, stop it.
But marriage, same-sex marriage, it becomes legal in Costa Rica on May 26th.
And what's up with Ted Cruz? Did we do the story last week?
I don't remember. What is
he
it?
He went after Hollywood for kowtowing to the Chinese communists, censoring gay material from Bohemian Rhapsody. He's only going after China. He's not going after Malaysia and all these other countries. He said the Chinese were opponents of artistic integrity for taking the gay thing out. It's integral to the story, he said.
He's an opportunist.
What?
He's exploiting us.
Hold it. He's introduced the Script Act, stopping censorship, restoring integrity, protecting Talkies Act. Talkies.
I was waiting for what the T was, and I was sure it was not going to be transsexuals.
Hey, speaking of talkies, we're going to link to a film about the silent films and the early talkies dealing with gay male bonding and gay relationships, gay male relationships. That's going to be in our email. So sign up for our email. Go to gayusatv.org.
And on PBS, they have announced their June Pride schedule. Lots and lots of reruns of lots and lots of gay shows. So check out PBS's June schedule. And they have a new show called Pride Land, a documentary about LGBT people in the South, which in fact is a hotbed of homosexuality and more. And they've also got this new thing called PBS Voices on YouTube, where they're going to have 6 episodes of mini documentaries, again, about the South. That starts May 26th.
Are we doing entertainment news?
We are.
Julie Halston, our friend, once a co-host of this show, at least once, is launching Virtual Halston, a half-hour chat show with her famous friends, starting Friday, May 22nd at 5 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. And it'll be at BroadwayWorld.com, and then every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern. Her first guest is Mario Cantone.
I keep hearing that one of the most popular things on Netflix right now is the documentary Circus of Books about the older straight couple who took over a gay porn bookstore, and people seem to find it extremely charming and delightful.
Less charming is Hollywood on Netflix from Ryan Murphy, set in Hollywood post-World War II. A lot of aspiring actors, full of gay characters, real and imagined. You know, there's a Rock Hudson character and everything. But look, I have friends who have liked the show, and somebody told me they cried at the last episode, so maybe I'll cry at the last episode. But boy, is it badly written. It is deeply bad writing. Some of it's grounded in facts, you know, about gay life then, and it deals with race. And it's got Patti LuPone and Holland Taylor and even Rob Reiner as the bigoted studio head. But it's like a cartoon. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot of bad reviews.
It's not realistic. Jeremy Pope is African-American. He plays a screenwriter. If you put the picture up, his African-American screenwriter is having an affair with Rock Hudson. You know, an extended affair, not just a trick.
A new show starting Sunday on Starz, a new series called Hightown, set and shot in Provincetown. It's a murder show and opioid addiction and the LGBT community that they've taken advantage of there in Provincetown. I have no idea whether it's any good. I'm just telling you it's coming up Sunday at 8 on Starz. But not coming up soon is any performances on Broadway. They've just extended the shutdown through Labor Day at least.
But boy, was Dear Evan Hansen a hotbed of romance. Ben Platt, who was the original, and Noah Galvin, who was the second guy to play the role of Evan, they're now quarantining together and have announced that they're dating. They're also quarantining with a female actress, a female actor. Apparently also two other Evans are also lovers, Taylor Trench and Ben Levy Ross. And Galvin says, it's incestuous, but that makes sense. We went through the war together and we feel very connected.
Yes, I'm sure they do. And the question is, when the war is over, will they still feel connected?
Well, that's true.
Yeah. All right. So what are we down to, our last minute or so?
We actually have 2 minutes. We're going to 29, and
okay, thank you. Well,
the Outer Critics Circle Awards were made, and they're honoring lots of people. They're all the people they would have nominated, they're giving awards to. So, like at The Inheritance, four of the actors were honored: Samuel H. Levine, John Benjamin Hickey, Paul Hilton, and Lois Smith. I think it's a better way to do it. Also, Michael R. Jackson, the writer of A Strange Loop.
I think they ought to do that all the time for all awards. Give everybody a medal or something.
Everybody gets an award.
Yeah. Well, not everybody.
They weren't any good.
But four or five or six of them, rather than just the one who's the best.
Those are the good choices.
Yeah. So the Oscars could do that, the Tonys, the Emmys, the everything.
Did you see about RuPaul going on The Price is Right?
Well, I saw it was going to happen, and I debated for about 3 seconds watching it. But then
I didn't watch it, but yeah. The whole idea was they rooted for somebody to win.